You're listening to Chicago's Afternoon News here on 720 WGN. I'm Steve Bertrand. On the phone line now is Congressman Adam Kinzinger, a Republican, 16th District from the state of Illinois. Congressman, welcome back.
Hey, Steve, it's good to be with you. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, I'm fascinated by this idea of expanding NATO. I want to get into that, but we were talking about Cuba about an hour ago, and it just I just wonder what you make of that situation and if the U.S. should be doing anything other than what it is doing.
Yeah, I mean, look, it's amazing, and it's kind of a I don't want to know if it's a really once-in-a-lifetime chance to bring freedom to Cuba, but, like, you know, you look at how repressive the regime has been. You figure if this protest is put down, it's probably going to be even more repressive.
Sure.
But I think the U.S. needs to do more. I think we need to be getting all the freedom-loving countries around the world to implement sanctions against anybody supporting the regime, on, and make it clear that we stand by a free Cuba. And you think about it, the Cubans are the ones holding up the Maduro regime in Venezuela, all these other kind of corrupt regimes. This could be a chance for freedom in our hemisphere, and certainly hope it goes right.
You're right, though, that it's a chance that if it's missed, and there's risks with encouraging it, but if it's missed, you tend to get a more repressive regime that comes after it to make sure it never happens again.
Yep, certainly so. And if you look at Iran in 2009, we had a chance. You know, there was some pretty big protests, and we kind of had a mealy response, and we're still there right now.
Yeah, but what are you talking about? Just the sanctions? You're not talking about putting anyone on the ground or anything like that, or any kind of strike to take out any of their capabilities?
No, I think what's the best thing to do right now is make it clear with, you know, basically all these democratic allies around the world that we're going to stand with, you know, the Cuban people for their, you know, aspirations for freedom. And I think the regime is actually so weak. They're strong when it comes to, like, you know, internal security and, you know, their secret service, but they're weak in terms of economic. And this is a chance for those protests to grow and really overthrow that regime and implement democracy. And I think Cuba is the exact place to do it. It's not, you know, there's no, like, radicalism per se. They just want to be able to eat food again and live a good life. And frankly, it'd be a great place to vacation under a free Cuba.
Okay, I don't know too much about NATO, but I know the N and the A stand for North Atlantic. How are you going to get how are you going to get Japan and Australia in there?
Well, I think, you know, the biggest thing we want to do is we're trying to look at what is a security construct that works for Asia, particularly as we see a growing, you know, threatening China to its allies, to democratic allies. And I think, you know, given that NATO has worked, it makes sense that instead of creating a whole new organization, which probably would never happen, and, you know, to basically say, look, let's bring some of these freedom-loving countries in Asia into the NATO construct. I mean, we've seen before in the past, you know, NATO acting, for instance, in Libya, NATO acting in Kosovo, and granted, that's all Europe and kind of in that area, but that wasn't the original mission of NATO. It was the deterrence of Russia. And so you see a construct that works, and it's not trying to invite conflict, but it is saying that, you know, again, it's part of what I talked about with Cuba, you know, democracies, freedom-loving countries, which have kind of grown weary in the last couple decades, thinking democracy was just going to be around forever. We do stand and we defend that. So I think the idea of, in essence, acquiescing these countries or allowing these countries into NATO is certainly provocative and certainly worth exploring.
We're talking to Congressman Adam Kinzinger, Republican from Illinois. Okay, I get that, but a lot of these countries that are in NATO now, you know, are, as you said, in there for the physical protection from Russia. They're not probably willing to pledge going to war for a country in Asia the way they would be a fellow country in Europe, right? I mean, that mutual defense could be a tough sell when you're going halfway around the world.
Yeah, I mean, that's certainly true. And I certainly think that this is, you know, if this is something that ultimately ends up happening, it's going to take a lot of legwork. It's going to take a lot of, you know, reestablishing our strong alliances to make it clear that, you know, China is not just a threat to its near neighbors. It's a threat, frankly, to the entire world, particularly when you talk about things like these debt traps going on and the Belt and Road Initiative, where China's basically getting their influence into countries all around the world. And, you know, as Europe is kind of awakening to the Chinese threat a little bit from the Chinese Communist Party, I think they're, you know, I was worried prior when the pandemic started, that actually Europe would just take money from China to recover. But sure, they're actually really waking up to that threat. And I think so it'll take some legwork and some effort. But I think it is probably the best way to ensure in the long term that we actually don't have a conflict in Asia, similar to how we never have fought Russia in a long time.
I was interested in talking to Adam Kinzinger, the piece you wrote in The Economist about the fact that currently the relationships in Asia are bilateral, right? We've got to deal with Australia, right. Australia with us, Japan with us, but Japan not the same with Australia. Explain for me the benefit of having several countries form together in a way that just aren't a bunch of singular relationships.
Yeah, so it's like, it's basically when you have a mutual treaty, so when you have kind of broader trade agreements, for instance, you put all these countries into a common construct. So it helps trade arrangements, makes them fairer for everybody. And on the defense side of things, again, if let's say China, God forbid, and I don't expect them to, but let's say they attacked Australia, you know, Australia would know that the United States is there to defend it. But in a broader construct of security, you would know that all these other allies would come in as well. Same with Japan, same with, you know, potentially anybody else that comes into this. And so when China is making its calculations, I mean, we're not seeking to invade China, of course, but when China makes its calculations on Taiwan and any of these other, you know, countries, India, now recognizing that you will face more, you'll face the world, I think makes, it's the old Reagan thing, it's like peace through strength. When they know that you're willing and able to fight back, it makes conflict very unlikely.
Well, we're talking about a soft war, right? Or soft power anyway,
right.
China's used their soft power around the world. If we can unite to exercise greater muscle when it comes to soft power, we'll be ahead of the game.
Yeah, and I think that's where we've kind of lost the construct. So back, you know, when it was the Soviet Union against the United States, we knew that in every country around the world there was a competition between basically freedom and communism.
It's like Congressman, now we don't know how to watch the Olympics, right? Back then we knew how to watch the Olympics.
Exactly. And so this would basically create a broader construct where we can compete with soft power, with ideas. You know, when China comes in and builds an interstate in a country, it's very, and by the way, this is happening in our very near shore. It's happening in Central America. China offers money. We can come in, yes, with economic help, but also with our strength of ideas and with a compelling case to say, this is better for your people, and you're not going to end up in a debt trap where China actually ends up owning your infrastructure.
Well, I'm sorry to say I don't know too much about this movement. Is it a movement, or is this just your initial idea, or where are we on this?
Yeah, this is an initial idea. I mean, there's been some discussion. Charles DeJoux knows this stuff very well as well. And, you know, he came to me and said, what do you think about this? And so I put some thought into it. We talked to some folks, and we realized this is a good way to start having that conversation. Now, whether it goes anywhere or not, I don't know. But we do know there's been some kind of thinking about it. And, you know, I think potentially it could get some legs, but not anytime in the next year or two. But I think an idea, you know, a real movement, a real change has to start with an idea.
Well, it is an interesting idea. We're talking to Illinois Congressman Adam Kinzinger, a Republican from the 16th District. Strong words from you on Meet the Press this weekend about Afghanistan. You called it a crushing defeat. Tell me why it's a crushing defeat to, after 20 years, get out of Afghanistan.
Yeah, look, and I know, certainly my point on this isn't popular right now. I understand that. But you look at what we started with Afghanistan. I certainly wish it could have gone faster. I wish we'd have been in different circumstances. But we went in there and said, look, the mission evolved to, we want a no safe haven for terrorism, and we want the Afghanistan government to be able to, in essence, defend itself, et cetera. And that's what we were doing. We had 2,500 troops there. It's not 100,000 like we used to. 2,500 troops, 5,000 NATO troops, whose sole mission was to both train and help Afghanistan think through things like logistics. But mostly we were attacking al-Qaeda and ISIS elements in Afghanistan. In fact, all of the fighting against the Taliban was being done by the Afghan military. It was a relative low cost to prevent the Taliban from taking control of Afghanistan again. And the second we left, what it does, what it did, and what it's doing is it's a massive moral victory for the Taliban. We saw a video that came out a couple days ago where 22 Afghan special forces, who are well-trained and very good, surrendered to the Taliban and were executed. That's a major war crime. And all because when we left, it broke the will of Afghanistan, and they have fled. And I think the pictures and the stuff we're going to see, I think that public opinion of 70% or whatever wanting to leave Afghanistan will quickly switch, similar to what we saw in Iraq. I mean, remember Iraq? People Sure. wanted to leave. We left. We got ISIS. And everybody realized we needed to go back. It's sad.
Republican Congressman Adam Kinzinger. Always great to talk to you, Congressman. Thanks very much.
You as well. Take care.
All right. Be well. You're listening to Chicago's Afternoon News. Hey, did you buy more books last year or the first 6 months of this year? Apparently, we're buying a lot more books. I want to talk to you about that coming up after the news, and the news in a couple of minutes from the Northwestern Medicine Newsroom. WGN.